This podcast is brought to you by Podcast Nation.
Welcome to The Real Reel, where we go behind the highlight reel and go into the unfiltered. I'm your host, Natalie Barbu, and let's get into it. Hello, Connor. Thanks for coming on the podcast.
What's up? Yeah, I had to come real far for this one.
I know. I texted him this morning and was like, so, you want to be on the show? Because I needed a guest for next week because I realized I was doing so many solo episodes in a row. And then my birthday is the next week. And I always want to do like a solo episode on my birthday. So I didn't want to do five solo episodes in a row. So we had to break it up with a guest. And you've been in my videos a lot lately. You've been on Instagram lately. So I thought, you know, keep the momentum going. Let's have the audience get to know Connor.
Yeah, I'm sure they're starting to get tired of your solos.
Yeah, I think solo they are. Episodes. I think they are. So we're breaking it up, bringing on a guest. And he's been in my vlogs recently. And we've been kind of not teasing because that's not really the right word for it. But I've been, you know, throwing feelers out there saying, like, do you want him to do a day in the life of a developer? And I feel like you've wanted to dabble into content creation a little bit more.
I've thought about it. I mean, we're surrounded by it constantly, and we obviously work on it every day, and it doesn't seem that hard.
You're going to anger our users.
Yeah. No. I think that's why I haven't. I've seen it. I've been around it all the time, and meeting creators and seeing the work that goes into it. It sounds like a great idea. It's just so much work. And even, you know, the other day, I was going to pick up something to hang these things in the office. I was like, oh, film yourself going to Ace Hardware. And that felt like a lot.
Yeah, you didn't want to do it. You were embarrassed.
No, I was embarrassed. I filmed the outside, but then I walked in there and I was obviously being in a tool store. I want to act like I know what I'm doing. And I'm some dude going in there looking for tools and knowing exactly where everything is. And then to take a step back and, you know, film me picking out a screwdriver.
You don't think that they would respect you in there
didn't
if
feel
you
right.
did that?
Didn't feel right, no.
Okay, well, it is a lot more work than it seems. But I wanted to talk about, you've been on the podcast before, I think twice now, but the first time we're not going to count. And then the second time was semi-recently, but it was with Nick. And so I wanted to highlight more just like you being a developer, being self-taught, kind of how you balance everything. And so diving into that. But I guess before we can start with like a little intro, Connor's my co-founder, by the way, in case you guys didn't know, of Rella. I always assume that people just like understand who is my guest and like I never feel to intro them. But Connor is my co-founder. He's a software engineer. He's a developer. But you weren't always an engineer. So were you always interested in you weren't always a software engineer. Were you always interested in coding, or is that the path that you thought you were going to take, or do you wish you did that in school instead of what you actually did?
No, definitely not. I definitely growing up didn't know anything about computers, didn't want to work in front of a computer, kind of told myself whatever I did when I grew up was not going to be in front of a computer.
Why? Why were you so against it?
I don't know. I don't think I had any solid reason. I just knew that I like being out and about, and I'm really social. I like talking to people. I like meeting people. I like making connections. Sitting in front of a computer just didn't necessarily seem all that enticing, and maybe just because in my head I thought sitting in front of a computer just meant, you know, spreadsheets and PowerPoints, which to some people it does, but that's not really what I wanted. So going into school, I did engineering. I don't really know why I did engineering. I don't really know why I even got into the program. I'm convinced it's because I took 3 years of auto shop class in high school.
Wait, that's why you got in, or that's why you wanted to do it?
That's why I got in. My whole theory is I had no idea what I wanted to study, no idea what I wanted to do. So I figured I would try and start difficult. And then if I didn't like it, kind of work my way back. So starting in like exploratory studies or whatever it was, and then trying to get into an engineering program or something like that, because it's just a lot harder. So I figured start there, work my way back if I didn't like it. Went with electrical engineering just because I liked physics. I'm a nerd. I really had a great physics teacher in high school. So I figured I'd start there, whatever, go engineering. Decided on electrical engineering. We did a little bit of programming. You know, it wasn't great, but then I got more into what I was studying, absolutely despised it. Hated it, did not like what I was studying at all.
Yeah, ECE, which is electrical engineering, the one class I had to take in ECE was my worst class. I hated it. Yep. And I got a D. It was my only D I've ever gotten.
Yeah, I know a lot of people.
I absolutely hated it.
A lot of people had to take that specific course you're talking about, and it was, they crammed like 4 semesters of what we learned in a 1 semester for you guys.
It was the worst. I remember it was my first semester senior year. So it was already my senior year, and I was like crying to my mom on the phone, being like, I don't know why you guys made me do this major. I was like, I hate this. I'm going to fail a class and then have to retake it my last semester. Like, I was so upset. But I got a D, and it wasn't a prereq for anything, so I was fine with it.
Don't they say D's get degrees, right?
Yeah, D's get degrees. As long as you're not failing, you're fine.
Yeah. But I did electrical, wasn't a huge fan of it, like once I started to get into actually what it was. But it was already junior year, and I had known a ton of engineers notorious for taking 5+ years for either switching out and going to a different major or just taking a little bit of extra time. I didn't want to take more time in school because I just wanted to get out in the real world, figure out what I wanted to do. So I saw some people doing some cool things with programming, just like in college, just little tinkering projects, and reached out to, you know, one of those guys and just said, hey, what is this whole world? What do you do? It looks cool. I might want to try it out. So he told me, recommended like some books to read. So I started doing that and then kind of became obsessed with that programming wise. So then I was in school full time and then also kind of teaching myself how to write code full time with the hopes of getting some sort of software engineer job. Mixed in there, I had an internship at like a big electrical engineering firm, and that was terrible. I just knew that was not going to be my future. So back to your question of if I wish I had done something different, not really. I think there's as much value in knowing what you don't want to do as there is in knowing what you do want to do. So I was able to see the other side of that, you know, from working jobs in college of working as like a brick masonry laborer, knowing, okay, well, stay in school. I don't really want to do that because that super respect for people who do that, but I did not want that to be my life either. So worked that and then worked at the electrical engineering firm and just realized I didn't want to do that either. So I think those experiences were extremely valuable. And I know people who studied, you know, computer science is the major for software engineers. Just talking to some people that did that, what they learned wasn't necessarily, it was very corporate, prepared you for a lot of these bigger jobs and working at these large companies, which again, is fine. Not really what I wanted. I wanted to build apps, build things, learn new technologies and stuff like that, which at the time, the only way I found to do that was through YouTube, the internet, talking to people, you know, bought some books, things like that. So, and then was applying to all these software engineering jobs. And obviously I wasn't a computer science major, so nobody would hire me.
Yeah.
So I was applying to all these jobs, never got anything. So then it was kind of that I'm 20, whatever I was, 21 at the time, 22. I'm already making no money. I might as well make no money for a little bit longer. So I figured I would start on my own doing some solo. I found a buddy or two to do it with me, and we started a software consultancy after school, which is then, I'm sure I've talked about this before on here, but led to meeting Natalie.
Yeah, so that's how we met. That's how we started working together. They stopped doing that and then came on to Rella. So his other co-founder from the consultancy also is our other co-founder at Rella, which you can listen to that podcast with him too. But do you think that you've always been a curious person? Like, were you always someone that was looking to learn new things and looking to learn new technologies? Or was it more like, okay, I don't know what I'm trying to do. Like, I don't like my major. I have to figure something out. Let me start learning. Or were you naturally like that?
I think I was naturally like that. I was definitely the kid in high school who everybody got annoyed with because I always asked questions.
Like in class?
In class. Like, I was always asking questions, like, you know, delaying the teacher being like, all right, class is up. So I was definitely that guy for sure.
Like asking, like, I don't understand, explain.
Like,
or
explain it to me 10 different ways so I can drill it into my brain and understand.
Really? I can't picture you wanting to learn a bunch of different ways, but I can't picture you like asking in front of everyone and in front of the class.
Well, it's one of those classic situations where I know I did it, but then when other people do it, I'm like, why the fuck are you doing that? That's why, it's annoying. But yeah. I did the same thing. So I kind of, at the same time, it's one of those self-reflective, like I understand it. But yeah, definitely always asking questions. You can ask my parents growing up. I was the why kid.
Like your parents would tell you to do something. You're like, but why? And they'd be like, because I said so.
Yeah, that would get me in trouble a lot. So yeah, always curious, always asking questions. So I think that was definitely kind of the root of a lot of it where I figured I'd try. So I tried a lot of different things.
Yeah. Did you always want to be an entrepreneur, or were you just, your goal was just to learn?
Goal was just to learn. That's like I said, I learned software, like writing software to try and work as a software engineer somewhere. When that didn't work out, that was kind of, I think, the switch that flipped of why not try something on my own? Because I didn't really, nobody in my family was entrepreneurs. I didn't grow up around it at all. Didn't really know what it was. It's also become a lot more common and popular within the last, I don't know, 10 years just with technology and the ability to do so. See, I think it was more out of necessity than, hey, I want to become an entrepreneur. Here are the steps I need to take. It was kind of, I'm interested in this. Let's learn this. Let's try, maybe make a career out of it. Okay, what I originally thought isn't working. Let's change paths and, you know, kind of try this other direction.
Let's talk about styling hair, because it is a whole production, especially when you are battling frizz. And take it from me, I live in Miami, Florida. It is about to be summer. I really know frizz, but honestly, I would rather be doing something else, like booking a spontaneous vacation to St. Barts or rewatching the Eras Tour for like the third time. You know, the important stuff. But who actually has time for frizz? Introducing Way's new anti-frizz cream. It is like a superhero for your hair. It provides immediate frizz control that lasts up to 72 hours. I actually brought it on a trip with me and my friend borrowed it and she purchased it right then and there because it was that good. So how does this fit into my hair routine? It is the best thing I could have done for my hair. I am all about saving time and the anti-frizz cream does just that. Plus the Sydney-inspired North Bondi scent is so amazing. You can think bergamot, Italian lemon violet, and more. And as someone who is always concerned about heat damage, because I definitely use a lot of heat on my hair, this anti-frizz cream provides heat protection, which is such a big relief. And my hair feels so much lighter and looks smoother after using it. Get busy being frizz-free with Way's new anti-frizz cream. It's not just about taming frizz. It also provides heat protection up to 450 degrees, reduces and repairs split ends, quenches dry hair with intense hydration. And according to a consumer perception study, 90% of participants agreed that their hair looked less frizzy after using it. I can definitely contest that. And while you're at it, check out Way's other bestsellers like the leave-in conditioner, which I also use, detox shampoo, fragrances, hair oils, and hair gloss. They're all essential for achieving that salon-worthy look at home. So you can frizz-free up your schedule with Way. Go to theouai.com and enter promo code RealReal for 15% off any product. That's theouai.com, promo code RealReal.
When you did realize, like, okay, I'm going to start my own software consultancy, I'm going to go in with, you know, these two guys and start this thing, were you thinking that was going to be your long-term goal and you were going to grow this giant agency or giant consultancy? Or, like, are you not a long-term thinker? Because sometimes, like, for me, for example, when I start things, in the beginning, I'm not really thinking long-term. I'm thinking, I want to do this right now, and I am very impulsive, and I just do it. Versus, like, some people, I think, have this long-term vision and then they work backwards. Like, I'm very much just like what is right in front of me and I do that.
I think it was a combination of the two. I think the right in front of me was the lowest barrier to entry was I was a decent programmer because I taught myself. I never worked on anything like super real world. I didn't have any money to, you know, put towards an idea. So it was okay, well, let's try and find people that have ideas, have a little bit of cash that will, you know, trust me in building those things. So it's me learning, also, you know, making a little bit of money, or at least not using my own money to work on things at the same time. So that was kind of that area of consulting. And then knowing that eventually, I don't know what it was, what it was going to look like, where it was going to be, I wanted to do something more long term in terms of sinking my teeth into a project, something that I can work on for a long time and, you know, pour my blood, sweat, and tears into, where consulting, you're working on other people's dreams, other people's passion projects, things like that. So I knew long term didn't want to do that. But in terms of actually knowing what, I didn't have an idea of, you know, I wanted to start X company in this industry and do this long term. No.
Yeah. When you had started the consultancy, or before then, I guess, when you were teaching yourself, what's the first step to learn how to do a new skill like coding? Let's say, like, do you settle on a language that you want to learn? Do you do like Code Academy? Do you just look on YouTube? Like, what is the tangible, like, first step that you would give advice to someone that's like, I want to do that, but I literally don't know what, how to start?
Yeah, I think the advice might be a little specific to software just because it's kind of an umbrella skill where once you learn one, it is relatively applicable to all of the other ones, just in a way of thinking, where I'm sure there's other specialized skills where once you start learning that, it doesn't really translate. But so kind of with that caveat, my first step was to reach out to people that I saw doing cool things instead of just going to the internet and programming 101. It was, okay, I knew, you know, somebody in college who was, you know, posting videos of him just making cool stuff and doing that. So that was my
first
step.
Started with content.
Yeah, honestly. I just saw him like posting on his Instagram little things he had been coding up and stuff like that. So that was the first step, was just, hey, I see you're doing something cool. So I knew, I had the confidence of knowing, okay, at least what he's telling me to learn could get me to this point that I saw what he was doing. So there was a path there to start, where I know, because when you're learning something new, it's really hard to decide, okay, what I'm spending the time right now learning, is it going to get where I want to go? Mm-hmm. Or is it going to give me any direction? Does anybody actually do this thing? I don't know, like learning content or learning how to grow on social media, learning really anything else. It's making sure you're at least starting in the right spot to go in the direction you think you want to go in.
Yeah.
So reach out to other people.
That's how, I mean, it was for me with Rella. Like, I had this idea, and I know we've talked about this before, but for me, when I had the idea of Rella, it was like a project in my head. Like, I didn't think it was like a company, because I don't know how to code. I don't know what that takes. I was like Googling, like, how much does it cost to build an app? Like, just like a generic Google search about it. And it was like, oh, it costs like $10,000. And I'm like, great, okay, I'll invest $10,000 and I'll, you know, have this app and no one will ever have to work on it again. It can be passive income for me. Like, I literally knew nothing going into it. And I say this for like anyone that wants to build something in a field that they are not remotely knowledgeable in, you can do it. If I could, like, you definitely could. So for me, I knew nothing. So I was just talking to a bunch of people. Like, I talked to this one guy in college that I knew that built an app, and he wasn't working on it anymore, but I was just asking him, like, how did he get it off the ground? I spoke with a bunch of like freelance developers and told them the idea and was like, how much do you think this would cost? What do you think it would be? And then that's when I met Connor, because I was just speaking to a bunch of people before I ever had any like money invested, before I ever like took the first step. It was just like acquiring all this knowledge so that I knew then which path I needed to go down. And so that's how, when I met Connor, I felt the most comfortable with their company. I felt like they understood what we were doing, that they were the most transparent about like the process, how much this would cost. And they really opened my eyes that it wasn't a project. This was a full-fledged company. And that really allowed me to take that first step of like, okay, now that I know that this isn't just a project, like, where do I go from here? And it allowed me to see like, how much money am I willing to invest? What is this process going to look like? And obviously so many things were still unknown, but it at least guided me. So I think if you're ever lost or you want to learn something new, just talk to people that you admire, that know more than you. Use your resources in college, cold email people that you follow. Like, I think just like reaching out to people is way better than reading blog posts or, you know, consuming content. Like, content is great, don't get me wrong. I think it's really great, but it's not going to give you specific answers like speaking to an actual person and having the ability to like ask them questions well.
And that, friends, is called taking it till you make it.
Yeah. Seriously, you have to. I think everyone does. And the more that, I mean, me and you have talked to a bunch of founders that we look up to, founders that look like they're doing like the coolest stuff on social media, and we'll talk to them and they also feel the same way of like, no, this is really hard, or like, we didn't know what we were doing, or we're still, you know, trying to figure X, Y, and Z out. And you just think that they know everything, and literally no one does. Like, no one knows everything. Everyone has their own set of challenges that are unique to yours. And it brought me a lot of reassurance that I was actually capable of doing this.
Yeah, and I think it's also learning that your level of confidence does not have to equate your current level of skill. Meaning, at least what we've seen in this, you know, in the entrepreneurship space, is levels of confidence generally far exceed levels of either skill or just current knowledge of a topic, because, you know, confidence sells. Exuding confidence is going to help you get further. And, you know, I think a lot of people have the feeling that they need to know exactly what they're doing or how to get to 10x what they're doing and build a career of what they're doing based off of what they know right now. And then their confidence matches that of, hey, I don't really know this, but I'm going to get there one day. No, you need to know or go in with the confidence of, I am there right now, even if you're not, knowing and believing in yourself to be able to get there. So kind of that mismatch of current confidence versus current ability and what you know.
Yeah, I like that a lot, thinking about it that way, because so many times people will think about it with, okay, if I don't know how to do something now, then that means I'm never going to. Yeah. And you just have to learn that, like, take anything in your life, like when you were a freshman in college compared to when you're a senior in college, like, you're so much smarter, you know so much more. There's so much that you've learned in the past few years that your freshman year self wouldn't have been able to do the things that your senior year self is doing. And it's the same thing with anything in life. So just having that confidence to do, or to believe that you can eventually get somewhere, I think is key, because too many people either don't start or they give up on the first like roadblock or challenge. And I think that is why so many either businesses fail. So many people think like it's impossible to start something, because it's really not. It's just you have to like persevere and get through it, as cheesy as it sounds. I always say like the biggest thing is consistency, because even take like social media, for example, I started so long ago. I started 13 years ago. I am not the most popular. I don't have millions of followers. There's people that started in the past year that are bigger than me, and I've been working on it for so much longer. But still, that doesn't take away from the fact that I have accomplished a career out of it. I love what I'm doing. I know way more than I did, you know, when I started. I'm a full-time creator. You know, like all of those things are still because I persevered. Like if I just gave up after 5 years of not being able to do it full-time, then I wouldn't have been able to quit my job and do it full-time. You know, so you just have to be consistent. And I know it's really, really cheesy, but I hope that it at least reaches someone that might feel like they're, you know, either don't want to start, want to give up or anything like that, because it's definitely a struggle. We've both felt that a lot.
Yeah, for sure. And roadmaps, mental roadmaps generally do not work out the way I think initially envisioned, but then it's balancing. I think it's still valuable to create those long-term mental roadmaps of where you think you're going to be. To like, again, going back, tying back to that confidence, but then not being discouraged when you're not where you thought you would be 3 years down the line, 4 years down the line.
That brings me to what I want to talk about, which is when we started Rella, when we started Rella, is your life now like what you envisioned? Or even if you want to take it back further, like, when you graduated college, is your life anything like what you envisioned it would be back then? Or would you change anything? Like, did your mental roadmap kind of go as planned? Or were you kind of just having like an open field as a roadmap and like wherever life takes you?
Well, considering I didn't really know what I wanted, I think there was a component of it to where I knew I wanted to do something I liked for myself and work with people I enjoyed working with. Making my own schedule, working, you know, when I wanted to work, resting when I didn't want to work, and kind of having my own, you know, perseverance and accountability be what determined where I was. So I think that component of it, yeah, that's what I'm doing. It's my input and my work and my drive is pretty much directly correlated to, you know, where I am and as I progress. But I mean, beyond that, I think it was so open-ended. I wouldn't necessarily change anything. I think the lessons we've learned and the mistakes we've made have been, you know, lessons of a lifetime. I, you know, talk internally, I think with what we've done, we've all learned, you know, honorary MBAs doing what we do. And I really don't think the experience gained in all this really can't be gained outside of doing what we're doing.
I'm very anti-MBA now. Like, I'm very vocal about that. Like, I don't think anyone, I mean, okay, maybe there's some people that, I don't think anyone needs to. No, I'm going to put it out there. Not a single person needs to. Could it be beneficial to some people? Yes. But I don't think a single person needs to do it in order to work at a certain company or shift careers. Like, I know some people are like, oh, well, I do it for a career shift. Okay, it could be easier, but I think there are other ways and easier ways to do it without spending, what is it, like $60,000, however much most MBA programs are. Like, I think there's more capital efficient ways to shift careers than that. So yeah, MBAs are a waste of money, in my opinion.
Well, it's also the combination and the shift of people's opinions on the hiring side of no longer taking that as kind of the golden ticket of, oh, this person has an MBA, I'm definitely going to hire them over somebody who doesn't. I think there's been that shift as well, the other side of the coin, the hiring coin or the career coin, to where, yeah, it might not be worth it. And you can get more beneficial experience in the real world. But also on the other side of things, I feel like less and less people are using that as kind of the, you know, the thing you need to make it far.
Okay. So obviously you are one of the founders of Rella. You now move down to Miami. You have a social life. You're in a relationship. How do you balance being a founder with making sure you're also taking time for like relationships and friendships and yourself and health and all of that stuff and like enjoying your 20s too? And it could be balance, it could be just how do all of those things work together? Because I always say it's like work-life harmony over balance, but I know that you've struggled with that sometimes. So that's why I'm asking you.
Very timely question. Yeah, no, I've definitely struggled with it. I think I've been doing it now for 4 years. I'm 26 now. So 4 or 5 years. And I think the past 4 or 5 years have been the whole mantra of, you know, sleeping at the office, always working, never stop. I think just kind of that common thing you hear.
You haven't actually slept at the office. No,
but the mentality.
Yeah.
From all the Silicon Valley tech bros. So I think that was a mentality. And then real recently, within the past maybe 6 months, it started to really catch up. And I've been talking to other founders kind of about that mentality. And it's a very common, I don't know if misconception's the right word, but it's a very common mentality to have heard, to have tried. And 9 times out of 10, it results in, you know, founder burnout or just losing the drive for what, you know, what you love doing, except for the psychopaths out there, like the Elon Musks of the world. But I think it's been really hard to balance work and life. I think there's also this misconception of being busy equaling productivity. So even when, you know, a lot of the times we're, especially in our universe, we're figuring out what's next. We ourselves are figuring that out. So we have these periods of time where we're kind of aimless, not necessarily aimless, but we're figuring out where to focus most of our energy. And in those times, it can be really easy to just make yourself be busy and always doing something, even if no real productive work is getting done. And we're not necessarily really moving the needle in terms of, you know, progressing towards our goals. So kind of with the combination of the needing to work, feeling I need to work all the time, and conflating the productivity with busyness has kind of resulted in just spending way too much time working in the office, just pushing myself to getting headaches and just, you know, neglecting some relationships I should not be neglecting. So all that being said, I've been trying to really work on my relationship with work and be better about that, because again, it's busyness does not equal productivity. And at the end of the day, I'm only 20 something once. And you see a lot of people, we have a lot of friends that work normal jobs, and it's the whole, once, you know, the end of the day hits, most people they're done. Their work bone is their work, whatever's turned off, and they're able to live the rest of their life. Where at least in our world, it's a lot harder to do that because, you know, an email comes in or a bug pops up in the code. And it's just kind of always that constant thing in the back of your head, which is makes it harder to be present when you're not actively working. So a roundabout way to say it's hard. It's been a struggle for me personally. And yeah, it started to like affect my sleep, my health, stuff like that. So I'm really trying to take active steps towards, you know, started journaling, started actually writing out every day, because my biggest thing was I would get to the end of the week and not having written anything down of what I did, I'd be like, damn, what'd I do this week?
And then you feel like, okay, I just wasted a week.
Exactly. Wasted a week, or, you know, feeling like every day I need to do something huge and neglecting to realize that the small wins every day at the end of the week, looking back and seeing all those is extremely valuable, but not writing them down. I then was just caught in a cycle of, oh shit, what did I do this week? So I started doing that, which, I mean, already has helped a ton, just being able to look back and see, okay, well, here's where I started the week, and then here's what I did throughout the week. And then, okay, well, now I can see progress, which has helped immensely. I feel like I earned the rest or earned the break. Yeah.
Yeah. I have started to kind of shift the way I also do like to-do list items or productivity stuff, because I feel like for a while, my calendar like ran my life, especially because I have so many different calls and so many different meetings. So I've now tried to like time block when I have my meetings so that I can actually have extent like hours of focus time. Because if I have 30-minute meeting, then a 30-minute break, then 30-minute meeting, then 15-minute break, then like I'm not getting anything done that day, because you can't get into deep work in 30 minutes. So I have my mornings where I don't have any calls for the most part. I can actually do deep work. I have my priorities for the day that I need to get done. And like, these are like big things rather than like the little tiny things that I can check off my to-do list that don't actually move the needle forward, but have like a like fake level of productivity because I like checked something off, you know? So it's been really, really helpful for me to reprioritize, but it's still something I'm working on, because it's very easy to just fall back into the trap of having your calendar run your day and also like not getting stuff done because you're just doing like little things to kind of feel accomplished. And then you're like, well, I didn't do anything today. So that's been like a huge thing that I've been trying to work on. I sent him a podcast today that I was like, yep, he needs to listen to, because it talks a little bit about like how to prioritize. And it was really insightful. So I think you'll like it.
Yeah, I'm definitely going to listen to it. I feel like it's kind of a relationship with work is like a relationship, I think, with anything where it starts out and you're in kind of this honeymoon phase. Everything is good and dandy and you can work all the time and everything's good. And, you know, you can just hammer away problems all the time.
Well, you're excited because it's new.
Correct. And then like any relationship, as time goes on, it doesn't necessarily, if it's a good relationship, it doesn't get worse. It just requires more conscious effort to work through things, make things work. So I think that's kind of a way I've started to think about it, where, you know, the longer you're or my relationship with Rella in the company, you now need to spend more time consciously working on how you interact in that relationship and how you work through problems and how you, you know, kind of deal with it.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. And also like in a new relationship, you have that honeymoon phase and then you get used to the person and then challenges arise and you second guess things. And it really is like a relationship with another person. So it's a good way to think about it. Do you feel like you fit the typical like founder persona? Did you envision yourself being like this tech bro? Because I know you said you didn't want to sit in front of a computer, but now that you are and you're in it, do you like that, like the stereotype that comes with it? Do you think you fit the stereotype? Because I definitely don't think I do.
Yeah.
But you're more on like the engineering side. And I feel like there's so many stereotypes with like the typical startup tech bro.
Yeah, I would like to think I don't fall into the ideal stereotype that I think people immediately equate to tech bro, of just this kind of indie hacker, you know, gamer, sit at the computer in a dark room all day, which I do a lot of in terms of sitting in a computer. Well, we have light now in the office, which is nice.
Thank God. Yeah, we're recording in our new office, guys. This is all natural, the light in here. And it's really nice.
Very, very nice. So I would say probably not. I think like any stereotype or any community of people, there's different variations and, you know, faction of the community. And I think I've met plenty of people who I would say I definitely equate myself to or relate to in the community of founders, and then others that I don't. So I think it's really a mixed bag. It's so diverse in terms of who's within the entrepreneurship community and even within the entrepreneurship community, the technical side of things. So I don't really know. Probably certain things I do maybe fall into the stereotype, but I would say as a whole, maybe not. But then again, people in a stereotype, I don't think ever think they're in a stereotype.
Yeah, I don't think you fit the typical like negative aspects of a tech bro, like the big ego or like very weird, because you're very social. Like that's where you, our other co-founder, Nick, is definitely, he doesn't fit the tech bro persona either, but he's more reserved, which I think is more software engineer like. But Connor is very, very social. Like, I feel like you like to talk a lot. Like, you honestly, you're being very reserved on this podcast, I think.
Really?
Compared to like normal, we gotta have a few drinks maybe and then you'll
yeah, I might open up. I don't know.
But yeah, you are a talker, so yeah. I feel like a lot of engineers aren't necessarily like that.
Yeah, no, it's definitely, I think it's just more fun. I love being behind a computer, but I also love talking to people and seeing the other side of it. But yeah, I would definitely say maybe probably that would be the biggest thing not in the stereotype, is that I love going out socially, like networking events. I know plenty of engineers that would rather put forks in their eyes than go to a networking event.
What would you do if you weren't doing Rella, you think? Let's say you never met me, never came up with the idea of Rella.
What would I be doing? I would either be living kind of deep in the Asian wilderness somewhere.
Really?
Yeah.
Wait, just what? Off, why do I not know this about you?
Off the grid? No, I don't know. I don't know what I'd be doing. I would be, I'd probably be like a ski bum or something if I wasn't doing this, just to kind of continue to figure it out, just because, I don't know. I don't know. That's a hard question, because.
You wouldn't go corporate route?
I don't know. I just, I saw what it looked like and I see other people do it and it's not appealing to me. So I think there's a lot of other career paths that aren't necessarily what I'm doing now on the corporate side. I don't know if I would make that transition. Maybe.
Yeah. I could see you being like a ski instructor and then like still learning how to code and doing consultancy.
Yeah.
You know, like still having like a passion project.
Maybe,
like,
go to culinary school or learn. What? I don't know. Just. I don't know, just do something random.
You said you're always wanting to learn.
Yeah, just doing something completely different. Become a firefighter. I don't know, do something different to where whole new skill set, whole new, you know, whatever, opposed to just transitioning current skills over to the corporate.
Yeah, I don't see you in corporate ever.
I don't think I fit that mold.
No, you don't. You don't. Yeah.
Yeah. No, not really my thing. I have a ton of friends that do it.
I can't see you having a boss, really. You know, besides me, of course.
Yeah, for sure.
I'm the face for, you know, having, you know, a creator in the front.
I should be the face.
Yeah. But,
my 856 followers, not 1,000
Maybe
followers.
If this podcast does well, people will actually demand that you are the face of Rella instead.
If people demand that, I don't think we can rob them
mm-hmm. yeah.
of a new face, a great face. Of a great company.
And then, like, you'd have to film all those TikToks. Mm-hmm. And you'd have to record yourself in Ace Hardware.
So I would take your job. Mm-hmm. And you would take my job.
I think the app would run so smoothly if Better. I was behind on the mm-hmm. keys.
Yeah. Yeah. I honestly, it's easy. What I do is just, you know, just a couple space bars.
Don't you just use, like, ChatGPT for everything now? Like, you don't even code yourself?
Yeah, you really don't need to know how to code.
Yeah. It's like everything's just AI.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're going to take our job. That kind of already took my job. I actually haven't written a line of code in the past, like, 6 months.
Are you actually being serious?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, I haven't. Not a single one.
Yes. What?
we were riffing on, like, a joke thing.
Convincing.
And then
I was like, what have you been doing?
No.
I was like, has ChatGPT really been writing all the code?
No, it's definitely helpful. But
we do use it for code, so that's why it's not far-fetched.
Yeah, okay. You still have to know. It's like anything. You have to know what questions to ask it.
Okay. Well, anyways, this was a great podcast episode. Anything else you want to share? You have the floor. You've been begging to come on my podcast. So
begging. I been? No, not really. I think content is king. And that's how we've been able to grow our business. So I love coming on these and doing content and experiencing. This is my form of content. It's just sitting and talking.
Should we give a discount code using your name so that we can see how many people come from you to
that
join Rella?
Nuts. Yeah, let's do that.
Okay. So type in code Connor and you can get
C-O-N-N-O-R.
O-R, yeah. Connor. And you can get half off of an annual plan.
Why don't we do 51% off?
51%. Okay. You'll get 51% off
Let's go.
Of an annual plan. How about that if you use the code Connor?
And we can advertise it as more than half off.
More than half off. You're pretty much getting Rella for free.
That's it. More than half off is free.
Mm-hmm. It rounds
That's
up.
Girl math.
It rounds up.
51% off girl math wise is basically free.
I'm surprised you know girl math because you're not on TikTok.
You
see it
a
month later on Reels.
Yeah, I see it on Reels, on YouTube Shorts.
Gabrielle sends you the funny TikToks to keep you in the know.
Yeah, she'll have to text them to me, though, since I don't have TikTok.
Mm, okay.
But I'll see them on Instagram, like, a day or two later.
A week or two.
It's pretty, honestly, it's honestly faster now. Okay. Well, because they might ban.
Yeah, which would not be good. That would actually kind of suck.
And LinkedIn's doing short-form content now, too.
Yeah, LinkedIn. I'm going to post some of these clips on LinkedIn. Guys, follow me on LinkedIn. I have, like, a little, I think I have like 3,500 followers or something on LinkedIn.
I don't know.
So, maybe like 300.
Not as many as you.
Maybe like 100 or two.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, the vacuum started again. So, use Connor's code, get 51% off Connor. And then follow us on Instagram. And thanks for coming on the podcast.
Thanks.
Thanks for listening to this week's episode of The Real Real. I hope that you enjoyed, and don't forget to rate, review, follow, or subscribe on your favorite podcast app. You can follow me personally on Instagram at Natalie Barbu and the podcast at The Real Real Podcast. I'll see you next Monday.
Hey, my name is Lovon Rumpf, and I've been working my ass off as a celebrity stylist by day and a podcast host by night. At the Low Life Podcast, it's all about keeping it real. We're talking fashion, beauty, to religion, sex, drugs, mental health. I mean, there's no topic off limits here, and vulnerability is mandatory. You can find my podcast, The Low Life, that's L-O, no W, everywhere and anywhere you listen to your podcasts. New episodes are out every Thursday. We'll see you then.
Hey there, my name is Renee Rina, and I am the mom friend you have always wanted. I am also the host of the Mom Room podcast. We publish 2 episodes per week, a co-hosted episode on Tuesdays and a solo episode on Thursdays. Popular topics include pooping and having sex after giving birth. I have a solo episode where I talk about not sharing a bed with my husband and why that's okay. I hope you'll tune in to these conversations every week. Join us on Instagram at the Mom Room podcast and start to feel a little less alone in this crazy thing called motherhood.